So the message I'm trying to get across is that we need people who think broadly, try to get at the very basic concepts, and aren't afraid to tackle problems that look very difficult. A lot of industrial research people think that if a problem is so difficult, why, they're going to get a bad performance review because they haven't made sufficient progress. So one tends to look at problems that can be solved easily. Even in graduate school, they tend to work on problems that can be solved, and you can get your degree and go on. But we're competitive now with the whole world, and we have to stay ahead of them. And I think the field in which we can stay ahead is in the innovative, basic research area. And we have to encourage that sort of thinking, and we have to encourage people to tackle very, very difficult problems and come up with solutions. And we have to be persistent enough to continue it, to provide the money and the research facilities. We need supervisory, managerial people who are also very technically competent and can recognize the types of research that have to be done. And perhaps their role would be to steer people clear of getting up blind alleys and getting into areas that yield only mediocre results. And as long as you can encourage people to go along the right path, but leave it up to them to determine how to get there, I think that we'll keep ahead of competition. And if we still make the innovative discoveries, and we have a good patent system to protect them, well, we're going to stay competitive in a world market in which the other countries may have some advantages in the applied development and production ends by being more efficient and especially with cheaper labor costs.
Do you think that's the way things are going? Well, it seems to me that there's been a change over the years, and there's a lot more emphasis now on research by objectives, as it's called in one of the departments at DuPont, or mission-oriented research, I guess is what the government calls it.
I think you need a combination. You can have this, but we certainly ought to allocate our resources in the innovative and new areas as well. And this is no different than before, except that perhaps it takes more people and more brighter people to make these discoveries, and so you have to put more effort on this. I think that this is being done, say, in the biological field now at DuPont. They've allocated many resources. And I see it pioneering that there isn't as much detailed direction from the top. It's left to the people themselves to formulate their objectives and how to get there. And I think this is important. So I think that the free enterprise system will swing to that which is successful, and they'll recognize that they have to go in this direction.
Good. Well, before we get too far astray, John, how about telling me a little bit about your family? Your wife, what was her maiden name?
Her maiden name was Laura McConathy. She went to school at Kentucky, and we met at Ohio State, where we were both graduate students.
And what was her field?
And her field was physical chemistry. She was working on a rather new field of gases above the critical temperature and a big bomb arrangement. And her difficulty was that the prof she was working for, Lassiter, went on the Manhattan Project and left, and no one else really took over her project. So she settled for doing all the work, all the coursework for a PhD, but never finished the work. And she went and to Goodrich, and I went to Goodyear. So we dated then and decided to get married. It was rather interesting. Of course, they were two rubber companies, so they were in competition. And about 3 weeks before we were to be married, her boss came into her and said, "You know, Laura, we discussed this matter and staff meeting here, and we decided it's all right. You can go ahead and marry that fellow from Goodyear."
didn't force her to make a choice then.
No, didn't force her to make a choice.
So you were married in what year?
Married in 1945.
Okay, and you'd been at, both been at in Akron then for about a year?
I started in, about a year. Right.
Now going back, you said she went to school in Kentucky. This is
right.
Undergraduate college?
Undergraduate, University of Kentucky.
University of Kentucky. Where is that?
In Lexington. Lexington. Yeah, they have the basketball team, you know.
I don't pay much attention to sports. How about, where was her hometown?
It was Lexington. Yeah, she lived on a farm.
Okay. And I won't ask too much about her background. That sounds very Irish.
Yeah, Scotch-Irish.
Scotch-Irish.
Right. So we're married in Akron, and a very small wedding during the war. Flew off to New York afterwards, and honeymoon. And she continued working at Goodrich until she was pregnant with our first child, John Jr., and that was in 1948. And about thereafter, every couple of years, we had a child. We have nine. And John is a lawyer in Washington. He got a degree as a physicist at Georgetown University, and then went to Georgetown Law School after a year of graduate work in physics, and decided that wasn't what he wanted to do. But he did work at the Bureau of Standards, and he worked while he went to law school. And now he's in the public law firm dealing in energy issues. And he likes that. And then second one is Betty Elizabeth, and she wanted to become an MD. She graduated in nursing and wasn't accepted by colleges here, universities, so she went down to work in Cape Town at the University of Stellenbosch, went to medical school. She went in a different language. They speak Afrikaans at the school. Her internship there, and then moved here and did a residency at St. Francis Hospital, and is now working in Atlanta in the emergency room at Big Atlanta Hospital. She has three children. She married a South African. He is a house father.
Yes, that's
right. So it's Betty, and then Susie, next daughter, and she did. Majored in English, got a degree, a master's degree in library science, and is a librarian for a large law firm in Columbus, Ohio. She has one child, is married to a fellow who is still studying for a PhD in teaching in English, and has a hobby in astronomy and is well known in this area. Bob is a mechanical engineer and works for the government and Navy in Naval Shipyard in Philadelphia. I'm married. Madeline is a MD. She went to Jefferson University in Philadelphia, and she is now a family practice in the Air Force to pay them back for their support of part of her career at Jefferson, part of her expenses at Jefferson. She has one child. She's married. Mary is working with retarded adults and is married. Husband does the same work. They were just recently married. Kathy carries mail. Husband works at DuPont and Pioneering. And they have two children. Carolyn is majoring in engineering, computer engineering, at Auburn University, has a year to go. And Peter is dropped out of school and is working wiring with a company doing telephone wiring and such in the local area. That completes the children.
Let's see, how many grandchildren do you have?
I have seven grandchildren. The oldest is nine.
Well, you have in the family some medical advice now, do you?
That's
your two daughters are the doctors.
Two daughters. And you realize how much there is to do in the field of medicine when you talk to them. There's an awful lot that we don't know, and so that the medical horizon and the field of biochemistry and just molecular biology and chemistry are still wide open, and this is a frontier that has a wide horizon in its ability to help mankind.
Well, did Laura get a chance to practice any chemistry after the children started
she
coming
worked
along?
At, no, not after the children yeah, came along. No, she's left that, and we do it. She does it sort of vicariously because all the children are working.
She shows up at many of the ACS meetings.
Well, she's also an employee of LJ Corporation.
Right.
She helps me in making reports out and looking up some of the literature. And so she serves a purpose there. She's very active in the League of Women Voters and in Patchen and Terrace, and the nuclear freeze movement.
Oh, good.
There.
Well, let's see. Give you a chance if you can think of something that you wanted to talk about that we didn't cover.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm still like sports. I play golf. I swim. And I've played bridge over the years at various levels.
Great. How about... let's see. I thought I would like to have you mention... others of your scientific colleagues that you...
Of course, we've been good friends with Paul Morgan for many years.
Oh, that's right.
And, know him and Stephanie. Stephanie Qualick. Emmy Whitbecker is retired. And people in other departments, including yourself. And people in ACS whom I've worked with.
Let me ask about, I was thinking of Don Niederhauser recently. Of course, his brother Warren.
Right.
In the ACS. He is also on one of the boards at Chalk, I think. Don was a physical chemist, wasn't he?
You want Don rather than Warren?
Not Warren. Yeah, Don. Yeah, he worked in Pioneer.
I think Don. I think he was more of organic chemist. Or generally, one speaks of polymer people as polymer chemists.
Right.
I think it transcends any discipline in organic or physical. You do what has to be done. So, and Don was. Certainly knew him, talked with him a lot.
I guess I had known him. The reason I thought he was in physical chemistry is I'd known him in connection with some some project or other that we had some mutual interest in. I don't recall what it was now.
He had quite an interest in polymerization of of acrylonitrile in the presence of zinc chloride and spinning of these solutions or casting film. And the polymerization was very fast and was initiated by light or by catalyst.
What about interactions with the people at the plants? You indicated earlier that you were principally concerned with new products, new fiber candidates. Did you go down to our plants on occasion for
very seldom. Very seldom. Because all of the work I did were in the primary stages, so that I didn't work on any of development projects at all. None of the scale-ups.
Well, if you had to do it all over again, you think you would pick chemistry?
I would think so. Especially in the times we grew up in, because chemistry was just starting to expand and show its value, so that it was a good field. Those were fine working times we had. We saw the field grow. We saw chemical meetings of, 2,000 or 3,000 go up to 10,000. So great proliferation and number of conferences held. Books, the literature expansion. We witnessed the growth of the field. Now, whether you would advise people to go into that field at the present time is questionable. But I think there, again, if you're good, if you want to get into new things, chemistry still has a lot of promise. Even the old fields, the fields of polymers, of fibers, plastics, are still growing, and there's still inventions to be made, and one sees that being made. So I think for someone who is good, it's not as wide open as it used to be, but there's always room for good people in these areas. And in the new fields of biological chemistry, the opportunities are many and varied. So chemistry is still a good field to be in.
Who helped you particularly in your career? You've mentioned Florey, of course. Are there other people that you recall particularly?
Dole and at Northwestern, Florey here, Heard of Northwestern, another influence. Newman, who was my preceptor along with Verhoek at Ohio State. And then primarily at Goodyear, it was Florey and the people I worked with too. Rebjohn, Leitner, Fox. Fox was a good friend for many years, and before he died, I knew him. There have been, all of the people. I knew Mark fairly well.
Yes.
And Stockmeyer, Harold Chiraga, known to.
Well, he was never a regular department consultant.
No, but I knew him. Knew him a lot. And Sperlin,
yes.
Hercules, Kowalski, Princeton, Bill Culbertson, Ashland Oil. Very competent fellow.
You're really naming the big names there.
Yeah.
Back to Malcolm Dole a bit. I didn't meet him until recent years. Up at an affair at Harvard, as a matter of fact. Very courtly gentleman.
Yeah.
Likely person.
Yeah.
He's on our list to do an interview of, I think. I hope somebody does him.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that I have any other thoughts or questions about Bill. He was fairly prominent, I think, in Palmer Division affairs of the ACS, hasn't he been?
In the Palmer Division itself, right, and giving papers, he wasn't in the governance of the society to any extent. I talked to Wunderlich, who's been consulting for the company. And been doing work. I think Wunderlich worked for Dole, matter of fact. They got a start in thermal behavior. Leo Mandelkern is another person I know quite well. Jim Mark.
Right,
Jim Economy.
Pardon?
Jim Economy. Worked with
recently. Let's see, what on the average, how many meetings did you attend a year? Can you average it out now?
Well, it probably only averages out to one or two, but there have been a lot of years.
True.
And recently, of course, as a counselor, I've been to almost every ACS meeting, and I've gone to Gordon conferences. So if you look at the last 15 years, I've probably been to three meetings a year.
Right. Okay, how many years total were you at DuPont?
I started in 51. And I quit in 82, so that's 31 years.
Right. Well, John, unless you can think of something else, some more statements, I think this probably concludes our interview. As I mentioned earlier, we will have this transcribed up at Chalk and taken through at least one editing to get it in a form where you will want to look at it, and we will eventually ask you to sign releases. The tapes and the transcripts will be available for future scholarly research up at the Center for History and Chemistry.
Sounds good.
For the center, I certainly appreciate your giving me your time today. It's been interesting.
It's been a pleasure, Ray.